How would you feel if you could put Amari Cooper in that list? I don't know why I got excited when I thought that maybe he was looking for another team. But then again, he just watched the Browns on Sunday while he was sitting out and probably said, that's not a team I want to go to right now. But not that he has a choice. I know, not his choice. But it sounds to me like he would like to hit the road, Jack, from Las Vegas. So there are all kinds of trade rumors. He reportedly informed the Raiders that he wants to be traded. And now there are plenty of teams that seem to be having preliminary interest, according to CBS Sports. The Steelers being one of them, Josina Anderson reporting that. The Cowboys, the Jets reaching out, maybe
all kinds of teams
thinking about that.
You see the name Browns in there anywhere?
New Orleans? No, not really, but you said you saw somebody that had the Browns listed.
There was one time that I saw that. But you know, it was like 10 teams that could be interested in, the Saskatchewan Roughriders might be there.
No. Have you seen their? They have really good wide receivers.
Latest one, 32 minutes ago from Cody Benjamin on CBS. These are typical. Cowboys. Okay. Why? Because the Cowboys,
Right.
Jets. Why? Aaron Rodgers. Steelers. Why? Because they wanted Brandon Ayuk and they didn't get him. Also, Saints. Why? Because Derek Carr and Davante Adams are college teammates, great buddies, great chemistry. All of a sudden, that hamstring that just suddenly creeped up on Thursday doesn't sound like that big of a deal. Did you see the Instagram like? This is one of the things that might be part of this. Is there was some Instagram thing that said that Davante Adams, somebody posted something that said Davante Adams might be traded, might want to trade, blah, blah, blah. Apparently, his head coach gave that a like, Antonio Pierce. And when Devontae was made aware of that, when he was talking to Kay Adams, no relation, on her little show.
Right.
He was like, oh. And she said, have you talked to your coach? No, but I want to. See, Devontae, not only is he great in the Taco Bell commercials, he's a great wide receiver.
That is true.
He's really good. And he doesn't look like a guy who's aging. He is 32.
I'd be in trouble if I had one in my house, too, by the way.
They make the best tacos. I would think you could go pick him up. If a team wants him, you could pick him up and know that he's going to play well and play for you. Raiders have said they want a second-round draft choice. If I'm a contender, I'm giving him a second-round draft choice. He does not look like a guy who's been affected by the clock turning past 30. And I would go get him if I was a team that thought I was a really good wide receiver away. Now, you want to bring him to Cleveland? Great. I'd bring him to Cleveland, except for one thing. And I don't mean to be a wise guy here. Is this team shown and knows what to do with good wide receivers?
No. Well, Jarvis Landry, if you considered him a good wide receiver, right?
That's some time ago.
I know. It feels like it's been a while.
Odell?
No. They didn't know what they were doing with Odell.
I didn't think they did either.
No.
Do they know what they're doing with Amari?
At times?
At times. Exactly right, Andy.
Yeah, they're a holding call away from making you say, yes, they know what they're doing.
I think Jerry Jeudy is showing some real signs of life. But if you put Amari and Jerry Jeudy and Davante Adams on this offense together, is it going to be chaos? Are they going to figure out how to get the ball to them? Could Deshaun Watson get the ball to all those guys? Could the offensive line protect long enough? As much as I love Davante Adams, and I do, I think he's a tremendous wide receiver. I don't know if it's a good fit. I love adding talent to that group.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wonder if it's a good fit because I'm not sure the team knows what to do with him. Would know what to do with them.
Well, it goes back to another part of the whole story for the Browns with Amari Cooper, right? So if they were willing to trade Amari in the beginning of the season, or at least listen to offers.
But they were for a big-time wide receiver.
Right. I don't know what I don't know how the money works out on that either, too. Like, let's say you send Amari there and Devonta here. I'm just looking at cap hit money and he's guaranteed $16.8 million, and he's carrying a $25 million cap hit this year.
All you got to do is restructure. You could make. They,
I don't know. They keep pushing
they
everything down the road.
They can make anything work.
I don't know. I keep looking at that, and I'm trying to figure that out. So, but the question there then becomes, you know, I don't know that you're trading Amari Cooper for him, but what if that suddenly, what if you decide, what is it, November 5th, November 4th is the trade deadline? It's right around Election Day, that they want to trade Amari Cooper. What does that mean? And, like, would you trade Amari Cooper? And I'm saying, I'm like, immediately I started thinking, okay, Devontae Adams for Amari Cooper.
Sorry, what's the record at the trade deadline?
Well, that's the question, isn't it?
I would think so, because if it's one or two and whatever it might be at that point, what would that be? Six? If the Browns,
two and
are,
six.
Browns are 1-6, 1-7, 2-7, 3-5, yeah, I'm trading Amari Cooper. Why? Because he's a free agent at the end of the year, and you've already shown you don't want him here.
That gets you to the bye week. They're in a weird spot. Like, the trade deadline comes right before the bye week for the Browns. So that they have the Chargers game, and then the trade deadline happens after that.
You'll know.
Is that right? Yeah.
You'll know on November 3rd, after you play the Chargers, whether you want to move key pieces on this team or not.
I'm not in a big hurry to move Amari Cooper. I'm not.
Well, neither am I.
A couple drops here, big deal. I don't care.
It has nothing to do with him, Andy. I think he's terrific.
Is it his contract?
I think it has everything to do with what their record is at the time of the trade deadline. It's nine games for the Browns when they hit the bye week. If they're 5-4, I'm not moving him. If they're 4-5, I'm not moving him. If they're 3-6, I'm thinking about it. If they're 2-7, I'm driving guys to the airport. If they're 2-7 at the trade deadline, heaven forbid, I'm driving guys with expiring contracts to the airport. Elijah Moore, thank you. It's been a pleasure. Amari, thank you. It's been a pleasure. Anybody on an expiring contract, if the Browns have stumbled to the bye week with a record of, like, you know, heaven forbid, 1-8, 2-7, maybe even 3-6. There's, from a business standpoint, Andy, there's no reason to hang on to guys on expiring contracts.
I can't disagree with you at all.
It's the baseball theory.
I mean, do we think that these guys are going to be sitting here? Do we think the Browns are going to be in that bad of shape? I don't know. I look at the record.
I don't.
Well, I think health is going to have a lot to do with that, and I think we all know that.
That's valid.
I think this week is a big week because we might get some guys back this week. You could get David Njoku back this week. You could get Jedrick Wills back this week. You could get Jack Conklin back this week. Nick Chubb. I mean, I'm not saying he's coming back this week, but especially when today is really his first day back at a real practice. Let's see what he looks like today and how that shakes out. There's zero expectations for him to be dressed this week, right? They're in a 21-day window. You're not expecting Nick Chubb anytime soon, are you?
No, I'm not.
I'm not either. So
I hope that he's able to return because that means his health is terrific. I'm not planning on him being here. If he's able to come back and they deem him healthy enough, great. That's by all means fantastic. But I'm not planning on it until they tell us that he's healthy enough to go.
I look at this Amari Cooper situation and I'm like, ugh. And is it? It doesn't have to be a situation. Again, you know, it's. I hate to say it. It's a situation because of a holding penalty now, and based on the fact in the beginning of the year that you thought, well, maybe we could put Cooper on the market,
and probably maybe a couple of blown coverages too, right?
Yeah, you're right. And just hanging on the ball. I mean, look, that interception just absolutely sucked. I mean, there's just not much more. The ball bounces up in the air. You know, it was just a weird play.
I don't want to make excuses for a guy, and I've just watched the play. If you notice, one of the Raiders kind of flashed in front of him, and it screamed to me, man, for just 1 second, that guy blocked his vision, and he should have still caught the ball. But for 1 second, his vision was disrupted. And that ball hit him right in the chest. It was on him before he knew it. It was clearly he needs to catch that ball, regardless of that. But if you're looking for an excuse and maybe a valid one, I think that's it. But, I mean, he's a really good wide receiver. He catches that ball.
Yeah, it just seems like things are just a tick off with him. It's not, and it's all correctable. I don't think that that's... again, you'd be feeling great if it was at 82 yards that got called back, 82, 83 yards on that play. It's just so weird how one play can change your whole dynamic, the whole outlook on things. And by the way, that could have meant a victory for the team too. So it's just – and then all of a sudden you turn around and you're like, well, I wonder if they need Amari Cooper, if they could trade Amari Cooper. What situation could they be in there? So Let's talk a little bit more about that. One, do you want Davante Adams? Two, at what point would you pull the trigger on maybe trading Amari Cooper? 216-474-0092. Or on social media on the X, you know where that's at CLE Talking Heads. We'll also hear from Kevin Stefanski a little bit later, his press conference in Berea. The Sal Pal, Sal Balantonio from ESPN, NFL matchup. He's got a new book out, How Football Explains America. I'm looking forward to talking to him about that in the noon hour. And we should probably hear from Deshaun Watson at some point during the day, probably closer to the 1 o'clock hour, as far as his press conference is concerned. Davante Adams wants out of Las Vegas. Where could he end up? There's a number of teams out there right now. Just looking at Pro Football Talk, looks like Jets, Saints seem to be on the top of his list. If he could pick his destination, as you said, Jeff, why the Jets and the Saints?
Aaron Rodgers, his former quarterback in Green Bay. Derek Carr, his former quarterback at Fresno State and with the Raiders.
There you go. So that might be why. Obviously, Browns fans, your ears percolate when you hear this. You're like, oh, I wonder how Davante Adams would look in a Browns uniform, Woody, and then what would you have to give up? Would you give up Amari Cooper? You know, what would that be the situation? I don't know. Would I be all in on that? No, I would like Amari Cooper and Davante Adams, but I want a lot of things. So let's go to Marcus in Aurora's been standing by. Hey, Marcus, how are you?
Hey guys, how are you?
Good.
Hi, Marcus.
Now, listen. First of all, the trade that the genius Josh McDaniels made, trading the 1 and 2 for Adams, was a disaster. And the Browns, if the Browns are 1 and 5, you know he's not going to want to come to Cleveland. He wants to go to a playoff team, and
he doesn't have a choice on this one though. And he has no. Well, he doesn't have a no trade in this deal either. So
he doesn't have a choice. That's true. And they're going to take whoever makes him the best offer,
right?
Whether it's they're not going to get what they want for him, I highly doubt it. So, like if the Jets or somebody offers a 2, they're probably going to take the deal. And you got to figure, if you're a bad team, why would you offer a high draft pick for a guy like that? He's probably not going to help get you to the playoffs or anything like that. At least not this season. And then if you're the Browns, do you want to even bother with a restructure for the guy? That's the other issue. And, you know, he quit on a one play. All it took was the one play. Minshew threw the pick, and Adams decided to bail out. And Pierce, one thing about Pierce, whether he wins or not in the long run, you can't quit on the field on the guy. So I don't know. I don't know if they want Cooper back. They want picks, and they'll take the highest one. They might even – I don't think the Chiefs would offer him a 1. People are saying, oh, yeah, the Chiefs will offer him a first round for Adams. I don't like making in-division trades, but if the Chiefs offered him a 1, I bet you they'd trade him.
Absolutely. They would take a number 1 from anybody for him, but nobody's going to give up a first-round pick.
No, not for a 31-year-old in the salary. No.
Yep. All right, Marcus, thank you. Appreciate it. Good stuff. Slater is in Valley City. Call 216-474-0092. Hi, Slater.
Hey, how we doing?
Good. How are you?
Fantastic. Jeff, you're the insulation guy, right? So if your offensive line is not keeping the heat off your quarterback, it don't matter what receiver you have. They can barely get the receivers their ball now. So I don't think bringing Davante Adams in here is going to solve anything until the offensive line can prove that they can protect the quarterback.
Which Slater is what I said early in the show.
Right. The great thing about Nick Chubb was, and I remember they were talking about the offense a couple years ago, they could leave a guy unblocked, and they trusted Nick Chubb to get past that guy. They can't do that with the running backs they have, and they can barely block the guys. The offensive line can barely get it done now with the backfield that they have. So, you know, will Nick Chubb be the answer? Perhaps. Is he going to be the same guy? Hopefully. But until they fix that offensive line, it don't matter what receiver they bring in here.
Yeah, Slater, I tend to agree with you on that. Thank you very much. In fact, I do agree with you. The offensive line's got to figure out – they've got to get healthy on the offensive line.
Isn't it just health?
Yeah, it's health.
It's just health. I mean, if Jack Conklin's healthy and able to play at his level, if Jedrick Wills is healthy and able to play at his level, don't insert a joke there. I'm being very serious.
Sure.
If Jed can do what he's done in the past, if Jack can do what he's done in the past, and Zach Zinter can go in and do a decent Wyatt Teller impression, mm-hmm. they'll be okay. And if Ethan Posick is okay. But guess what? We've just talked about four of the five spots on the offensive line. There are issues there, and they have to get fixed.
And the schedule gets harder.
And other teams are dealing with offensive line issues and somehow don't have the same kind of issues the Browns have. Think about that. Okay, other teams are beat up on the offensive line around the league as well, and they're handling it better than the Browns are handling it right now.
You know, we talk about this identity thing with the Browns, and do they have an identity? What's their identity? What is the offense going to be? I think that's part of it. What is it going to be, right? And you have to ask yourself, this is the question I keep asking myself. Like, Jed Wills, everyone was ready to throw him out of here. And now all of a sudden, it feels like if he comes back, he's going to be somewhat of a savior to be able to come back and play on that offensive line. To me, that's worrisome. I don't know. They don't have an identity on offense right now because they don't have an offensive line that can string together. And then, you know, when you think they should run, they don't. And sometimes they pass the ball too much. And they can't play four quarters of football. At least they proved that in the losses for sure. That they need to be able to figure out a way to play all four quarters. And I just don't have a whole lot of faith. I might start having faith, though, when Nick is back, when Njoku is back, when the offensive line is intact. But even just going into that whole notion of what is their identity, right now their identity on offense, Jeff, and tell me if you disagree, is just broken. They're broken.
To me, that's not an identity. That's just a fact. You know, right now their offensive line's in trouble. And David Njoku not being there and Nick Chubb not being there. You know, you expected Nick not to be there, but David, you didn't. To me, Andy, they have three guys on the offensive side of the ball who can put fear into a defense. Nick Chubb, David Njoku, Amari Cooper. That's it.
And only one of them's on the field
right now. And they're working with a really beat up offensive line. They haven't had a chance to establish any kind of an identity on offense.
In fairness. Mr. Scoop and Score was on Ken Carman show yesterday with Anthony Lima, Rodney McLeod.
Mr. Scoop and Score.
I thought it was
awesome. Is he trademarking that?
I call him Mr. Scoop and Score. I thought it was awesome to watch. I love Scoop and Scores. I just think they're cool.
Sounds like a Christmas gift for you.
But he also,
like the Scoop and Score.
When he was on the show yesterday, he talked about exactly what we're talking about, that whole identity situation for the offense or for the team.
You can have great talent, but there's bad coaching that exists in this league.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why some people are shipped out every year. Some people also just don't know how to necessarily lead a group of men. That can be a factor, too. And I feel like what's brewing right now, and we kind of hinted at it earlier a couple weeks ago, the trust. Where is that trust between coaches and players? It's going to reveal itself very soon in how people truly feel, because you know how it goes. You get in front of that camera, those questions get asked. There's only a matter of time before the truth and what's happening in the dark starts to come to light.
Thought that was interesting. You know, when you get
kind of heavy, isn't it?
Yeah. And for somebody who's in the locker room, too, mm-hmm. right? And is making plays and just, you know, what are they going to be? Because the rougher this gets, the more, you know, the little dark clouds start coming out. And they start hovering over Berea. And then you start hearing stuff that's even worse. And it makes it – and it's not that it's worse. It's just worse at the time. How come so-and-so's not getting the ball? Why aren't we running the ball more? Why aren't we passing the ball more? Did that guy hustle on that play? How come that guy quit on that play? Why did he make that decision? When you win, no one's ever asking those questions. But when you lose, they're all out there. Roman is in Canton. Hi, Roman.
Hey, fellas. Just wanted to chime in. I'm wondering where this confidence in Jed Wills coming back and, you know, our line, you know, coming to what it used to be. I wonder where the confidence comes from, because Jed Wills has been, honestly, since he's been drafted, he hasn't been above average by any means. So I don't know what getting him back is going to do. I'm and I know we've talked about it before and we've kind of brushed it off as like a non-issue, but what's going on with our strength and conditioning? I know it's not our medical staff. I think they're doing a good job by dealing with what they deal with, but we are the most hurt team in the NFL pretty consistently. At least that's what we use as an excuse as fans.
Where do you get that, Roman?
Well, you know, last year we were hurt. I feel like every time we have a groove or we think that we should be better than we are, it's always, oh, well, we're so hurt. We're the most hurt team in the NFL. You know, we had 26% of the roster last year on the IR or hurt during the season. So you saw how many guys
80%, 80% of their offensive line was hurt in the last game.
Okay, so why are guys getting hurt so much? We had Jordan Hicks goes out. We had, you know, like you said, our line just started dropping like flies, and that's been pretty often. I don't have any confidence in Jack Conklin because he can't stay on the field. So I think it's deeper rooted. I don't know if it's on the strength and conditioning. I don't know what the deal is, but I feel like, and this is an opinion.
I know they got that new gym. I'm looking at other teams. Like, I just looked at Detroit. Detroit had 17 guys listed as injured, whether they were out or, you know, still return. I mean, most teams are putting 12 to, I don't know, 17 might be the big one that I just noticed. The injured lists on every team are long. It's not just here.
Andy, I agree with you.
Is that just on the board of like who's hurt and who's playing through it?
Yeah, I just looked up NFL injuries and I went through like every team and I'm just counting numbers, not names. But like the Cardinals have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Because it's one thing to be banged up. Right. It's one thing to be banged up and be playing through injuries like we've heard that Miles has been doing. You know, Miles, that's one thing to be playing through them. But we have guys that are consistently out or get hurt through games. And we point to, well, you know, if we just had everybody healthy, we'd be okay. I'm tired of it. Why isn't everybody healthy? Why do we have so many guys dropping like flies?
I thank you, Roman. It's a good question.
Conklin, Jack's had major knee injuries.
Yeah.
It's like saying Nick Chubb's not healthy. Nick's had major knee injuries.
Well, that's what I kept thinking about. I'm like, are you going to blame strength and conditioning on Nick Chubb? He's the last guy I'm doing that to. So, all right, more
on
this.
And the same thing for Conklin. When Jack hasn't had major knee injuries, he's out there.
I don't know. That identity question seems interesting. And will they grow one here if the guys come back and are healthier? And then maybe we see something that we haven't seen all season long. 216-474-0092 or on social media on the X at CLE Talking Heads. Andrew Siciliano joins us in the next hour of Baskin and Fox. He will join us again at 11:20. We'll talk to him. He's from the Browns Radio Network. But, man, he had a busy weekend last week, called that Ohio State-Michigan State game. And then, boom, turned right around and called the Browns game. So, got to give him something better to talk about, though. That's the thing. So, we'll talk to him coming up in a little bit. Plus, Sal Palantoni. I'm looking forward to that at 12:20. We've been talking about a number of things. Davante Adams, you know, wanting out in Las Vegas. Amari Cooper, and I guess I could just ask the basic question, would you trade him and when? I think the when part of it is super important when you look at what the Browns are doing right now, because if you do trade him, does that mean you're throwing up the white flag on the season? 216-474-0092, 216-474-0092. And then we also, Jeff, I just want to touch on this real quick, talking about the last caller who was talking about the injuries, and it just feels like the Browns are the team – that have the most injuries in the league. But that's just...
Who's our buddy Roman in Canton?
Yeah, and so... but it just, if you look at the list, and I, you know, again, they'll put anyone on the list that might even have a paper cut.
Those hurt.
But they're nasty sometimes.
Absolutely. You don't want to get them infected.
I'm just like, Tampa Bay last week had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. They had like 15 guys that were questionable going into last week's game. Now, how many are out?
Why? Bad strength and training staffs.
Oh, that's what it is. Always blame strength and conditioning. Ray is in Chardon. Hi, Ray. How are you?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hello, Ray.
What do you got?
No, I hate saying it because I was a Jack Conklin fan before he came here. Mm-hmm. But at this point, I feel like he has just taken up a roster spot. Like, when was the last time how many games in a Browns uniform has he actually played for us? I feel like he's been injured for 3 years now. They keep saying Jack Conklin's a starting right tackle. I haven't seen him on the field since he showed up here. He was great in Tennessee.
How many games has
How many games has he played?
He's played 94 in his career for the Browns. What do we got? He started in 2022. He started 14 of 14 games, and then when he Tennessee in 19, so he missed 21. He's 16-16. So when he plays, he plays. So
he's had some major injuries.
37. He's played 37 games for the Browns in 4 years.
4 years.
Yeah. Huh.
I'm mistaken. Okay. Have a good day, guys.
No worries. Thanks, Ray.
Guys have these major things. Nick Chubb can't play last year.
Is anybody mad?
Nick got hurt. He was seriously hurt. Jack Conklin, we saw the knee injury last year, did we not?
Yes.
You're not going to get back on a football field with that. Does that mean that, my hip hurts, I can't play this week? Nope, that's not what that means. That means his knee was destroyed. You don't play football with destroyed knees. So can we quit questioning these guys' toughness? I mean, Nick Chubb's tough. Nobody's questioning Nick. Well, why question Jack? He had the same kind of an injury. His knee was destroyed.
I can't argue with anything you just said. 216-474-0092. 216-474-0092. Let me go back to that original question. I think it's pretty simple. Would you trade Amari Cooper? My answer is no. Now, if you get close to the trade deadline and you're stuck on one win and he's sitting here without a contract for next year, maybe you do everybody a favor, including him, and give him a chance to go play on a team that might be able to make the playoffs at that point.
My answer is absolutely I would trade Amari Cooper. Only if you get to the trade deadline and you have like two wins or three wins. If you're 4-5, I'm not trading him. 4-5, you can get into the playoffs. Run off some wins in a row, you can make the playoffs. If you're 2-7, by all means, I'm trading him at the trade deadline. Why? Because it's not about Amari. It's about build your team for next year. And if you could trade him to a team that could use him and give you even a fifth-round pick.
Again, I think it depends. Like, do you think if they traded him now at 1-3, what is his value? If you trade him at the trade deadline, I can't remember how many games we said that was, but
9.
9. So if you're 1-8, what is his trade value? Unless you get two teams that are both bidding on him.
His trade value is going to be like a fifth round pick.
No matter what, no matter if it's now or then.
Now it's probably a little bit more.
I would think so too.
I'm not trading him. You're 1-3. Teams can make the playoffs at 1-3. We know the numbers aren't good. We mentioned those yesterday. I think it's 5% of teams that have been 1-3 make the playoffs under different schedule formats, certainly. But look, if your confidence in the Browns is absolutely shot after four games because they're 1-3 with an offensive line that's in shreds, well, then you weren't very confident in them in the first place. And I think they can bounce back if they get better offensive line play and if their defense can tackle the running game. We got to remember, that's not worked very well either. Just have to tackle better on defense. Clearly some issues going on here, but if you happen to go on the road and win this week in Washington and the following week in Philadelphia and the Eagles don't look like world beaters, you're 3-3. Okay? That happens. Everything, it's a different world. You go on the road the next 2 weeks and you lose twice and you're 1-5. Well, we'll see changes and we'll see them fast. I think we'll see trades. I think it would be stunning, but we could even see bigger shakeups than that. You know what I mean by that?
Oh, absolutely. I know what you're saying. There is one thing that gives me hope and a little bit of faith, and that goes back to the fact that Deshaun Watson's been here before. Now, he didn't have the same injury before, but I don't know why, but I keep going back and looking at that 2018 team from Houston that started off the season 0-3, and that they came back and ended up making the playoffs. That team easily could have been 0-5 to start the season. They lost three in a row and then won their next two games in overtime to get back, to crawl back up to 2-3. So there's a little bit of history there, and it does give me a little bit of confidence that Deshaun knows how to, I don't know, steer the boat through a real bad storm. Because he's seen that. He's been here before. He's done that. And, you know, I wish he would have played more games along the way? Yeah, I do. But, and he also did have, you know, hit some pretty good guys on that team. You know, there's a point to there, to that season, to that 2018 Houston Texans season, that gives me a little bit of confidence that maybe he can get things rolling. Because he's been here, he's done this, and maybe he doesn't. He knows when not to panic. I mean, that team rattled off 1, 2, 3. Man, I feel like I'm doing a lot of counting today. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. They rattled off 10 wins in a row after starting the season 0-3.
That's swell.
Is that right? 10 wins? What'd they end up with that season? That 9 wins in a row. They were 11-5 with Bill O'Brien that year. And so, I think history sometimes says some things.
You see a team every year in the NFL, Andy, that has a lousy start, puts it together, and ends up making the playoffs. It seems to happen every year. Now, 1-3, that's, you know, who knows. But, you know, teams at 2-4, whatever, get it together and just put it together. We'll see if the Browns can be that kind of a team, because obviously they've had a lousy start. Let's not sugarcoat that.
Mm-hmm.
Even with the injuries, it's a lousy start. You know, I think they should have won the Raider game.
They should have won the
Giant game.
Yes.
I think they should be 3-1 right now. Cowboys, I get it. You didn't play very well, and the Cowboys, though they haven't looked like world beaters since, did that day. They played really well. I think the team should be 3-1. The fact that they're not, well, that's an issue. That's a problem. And that's on the coaches. It's on the player. It's on everybody there. They were lousy the last 2 weeks against teams that I thought they should have beat, but they didn't. So now they've got to figure it out.
I hate to look ahead, but do you think the easier part of the schedule is going to be the AFC North games?
Nope. Absolutely not. I mean, Andy, the two most winnable games on their schedule, three, I think, at least if you're looking for a stretch where it's like, okay, that looks good, that looks good, that looks good. It's the last 3 weeks, and they went 1-2. You know, as it's turned out, Jacksonville's not doing very well. The Giants, eh. The Raiders are 2-2, but still. I mean, didn't you think they should have beaten the Raiders?
Yes.
With the worst run offense in the NFL?
Yes.
And they gained over 150 yards against the Browns?
It's hard to look at them and look at the Giants are 1-3, and now we know where they're 1. I hate looking at that. And now you got the Commanders, who are 3-1. That's who you're playing this week. It's still weird.
And Jaden Daniels is lighting it up.
And he looks fantastic. We haven't really talked about this, and I'll just touch on it for 1 second here, too, that you look at the AFC North, and it still doesn't look like are the Steelers really a 3-1 team right now? Are they really the best team?
I think the division is sitting there waiting to be won by somebody. Right now, I think that somebody's Baltimore.
At 2-2.
Yeah.
And the Bengals picked up their first win. So I look at this and I'm like, the AFC North also gives me hope. So I'm looking at trying to give myself hope, and I was so frustrated on Sunday, I didn't think I'd be able to see any of that by now. And I'm not trying to sugarcoat it. I'm just trying to figure out paths and patterns and things that the Browns, you know, can give you a little bit of reason to believe. And knowing that it's a long season, you know, that all comes into effect too. So it's all sitting there. Waiting for you. I still, you know, so you think it's Ravens still?
Yeah.
Pittsburgh's defense, though, still gives me a lot of reason.
And their offense gives me reason to think they're coming back to the pack. I think Russell Wilson will be the starter there eventually here still. And I know Justin Fields has played well.
I don't know. And then you look at the Bengals' defense has given up 104 points in four games. No one's even close in the North. Not even close. Steelers have only given up 53. The Ravens have given up 88. Even the Browns have only given up 87 points. It's that fact that they've only scored 66. That looks so ugly. I'm looking at the Patriots have only scored 52, and the Dolphins have scored 45. And we all know what shape they're in as far as their quarterback's concerned. So, I don't know, all those things sitting there. You know who we can ask more questions to? Andrew Siciliano from the Bronze Radio Network. He'll join us next. Baskin and Phelps, 92.3 The Fan. A traveling man and a very hard-working man. He is Andrew Siciliano, and he is on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. What's up, traveling man? How are you doing?
Hello, sir.
Good morning, guys. I would like to, whenever you say traveling man, I'm going to just say lucky man.
You are lucky.
Just a lucky guy who gets to do this. Yeah. Good morning, guys. How are you?
Although you sounded great on both games that I listened to last week. So I say that to you not only to be nice, but I thought you, I mean, especially the Sunday game was a tough one. But the Saturday one was a lot of fun. And you got to see two of the best catches, I think, of the whole weekend in college football.
Yeah, back-to-back as well. I mean, a couple seconds apart. Let me tell you guys, the amount of respect and praise for an 18-year-old through the roof. And look, there's always the coach speak on the podium, right? Which is, oh, the guy's working hard and, you know, he's going to have a bright future and we're really excited to have him. You know, there's that kind of stuff. And then there is the behind the scenes stuff when you're actually talking to coaches and it's legit the praise and respect that they have for Jeremiah Smith and the fact that he practices like a 10-year veteran and the fact that, you know, they think legitimately he can play in the NFL tomorrow if he had to. He is that good and that ready, and he's a kid who's asking to be on punt block team. You know, he might have $1 million allegedly NIL deal. His Twitter handle might say professional football player, but he practices like a pro. He does not act like a spoiled kid, and everybody's raving about him for good reason.
Oh, he's awesome to watch. Awesome to watch.
Can we put him in an orange helmet for Sunday?
You know, I got a couple of tweets during the game. Can you please bring him with you to Vegas?
How'd that work?
Hey, I'm happy I got there. That was a long one, and that gave me a little anxiety, and so I'm happy we got there. And heck, got there in like 4 hours before the game. It was fantastic.
So riddle me this one, my friend. Amari Cooper has had an up and down start to the season. He's the least of my concerns. Is that fair? That he's the least of my concerns?
I think it is.
Okay.
I think his track record proves that these are bumps in the road and that he will be fine. It was disappointing last week. I mean, that was one of Deshaun's better throws of the season, you know, to hit a downfield shot and have it go right through his hands. And then the Raiders, six plays later, put points on the board. That was a massive, massive swing. But I also saw the Amari Cooper that ran away from people on that 82-yard touchdown that probably should have stood, and Deshaun make a great throw on that. So it's not as if, look, he bounced back in the same game is my point. But, yeah, that one hurt because when the margin of error is as slim as it is right now, you need plays like that, especially in the fourth quarter because the fourth quarter has been their nemesis.
So how do they do it? How do they put four quarters together? Because I think that's what we're all waiting for.
Yeah, look, that's the big question here. And if you could somehow bottle that first drive magic, they've scored on all five opening drives, then I think they'd be in a better – well, I know they'd be in a better position. You can't leave it to the fourth quarter. This team is better than the teams you've played the last 2 weeks. As odd as that sounds, I know it didn't feel that way when you looked at the calendar. It looked at the schedule midsummer. This team is better than the other two teams you have faced.
Agreed.
And you're going into a building that is going to be loud. They have that franchise, that fan base is awake again. It had been dormant for a long, long time. It is awake. People are fighting over tickets like they haven't done in 25 years there. This is a different beast this week, and Jaden Daniels is truly the real deal. But the thing that gets me, if you ask, well, how do you win this week? You got to stop the run, and you couldn't stop the run last week against the worst run team in the NFL. This Washington team, don't be fooled by the shiny object that is Jaden Daniels. They're a run-first team, and he is part of that. Collectively, Jaden Daniels, Brian Robinson, and Austin Eckler, assuming he's back this week, have already run for 600 yards. They ran for 219 as a team last week. So you got to stop the run this week.
Speaking of that, stunned the heck out of you that the Raiders ran for 152 yards against the Browns?
Yes, considering they came in with 151 combined with the previous three, I would say yes.
So what's the problem?
I mean, tackling was the problem with that one. You got one guy out of a gap, and then you got to have Ronnie Hickman, you know, try to save a touchdown. There are a lot of – the thing for me this week is tackling on the edge, tackling on the perimeter, because the Commanders aren't just a run team. They're a screen team. I believe – and this number blew me away when I saw it last night. I believe 76% of their first down play calls are screens or runs. 76%. So they're going to test you on the edge, and you got to tackle in space. You got to come up, and you got to wrap up. If you get that guy into the line of scrimmage, you got to bring him down, period. Look, easy for me to say, but they have guys, the Browns, we have guys that clearly have shown an ability to tackle on the perimeter and hit hard. You got safeties that can, you know, shoot the gap and get him in the backfield. You just got to bring him down, because this is what they do. They run the ball, and then they take a couple of shots downfield.
All right, riddle me this one, Batman. How can the Browns look so good on the first drive and then not be able to put the offense together again for the rest of the game?
Look, they're not the first team to have that dilemma. It's actually a lot more common than you think. You work all week on, I don't want to call it your script, but, you know, your opening drive. You work all week on your first quarter, your opening drive, your first 10, your first 15. You drill them down, you execute them perfectly, and then you got to get to everything else, and then teams make adjustments. I mean, that's a very simplistic, you know, your dad on the couch analysis. Why don't they adjust? But they've got to find a way to put drives together in the second, the third, and the fourth quarters. And if that's more of dedication to the run, I don't know what it is, to be quite frank. But Deshaun opened 9 for 9. And he looked pretty good. And that's not to suggest he didn't throw good balls in the fourth quarter. He did. But they had the death by a thousand paper cuts of a couple of little things, including the Nick Harris hold, which upon further review, I don't think it met the standard of an egregious hold. I think Miles has been held like that 4 to 5 times a game, if not more, and it not be called almost every week. I would have liked to have seen that one picked up, but yet still they had chances at the end.
Deshaun, I thought, played fairly well. Certainly played well enough to win against the Raiders. What growth have you seen?
That's a great question. I think he's taken some more shots downfield confidently. Obviously, there's the one in which he couldn't connect with Amari, in which he got mad at DeJuan afterwards. There was the second play of the game where he scrambled to the right and Jerry Jeudy made a great toe-tip catch on the sideline in front of the Browns bench. You know, he had Cooper over the middle. I don't know if that's the right read at first. I have not asked that question, but it looked like there are times to rip them downfield, you know, deep in cuts, deep posts, whatever, that aren't being taken. But he took what was given him early in that drive, early in that quarter. He started well, and if you believe in PFF rankings, it was his best game, I believe, as a Brown.
All right, a lot of fans want to blame this, blame that, blame this, whatever. How long do you think it takes when you bring in a new offensive coordinator, you bring in a new offensive line coach, how long do you think it takes for this thing to really gel and find itself when Kevin's been calling the plays and Kevin is calling the plays? Like, are people jumping to conclusions too fast about the impact of the coaching on why they're 1-3?
I think that's low-hanging fruit, to be honest with you. I think the bigger concern is the health and the communication of and on the offensive line. That's just me. You know, everybody on the same page. I can't remember who asked it, but somebody asked Kevin on Monday, like, hey, everyone keeps saying everyone on the same page. Or giving that answer, is that just, you know, a cliche? And I think it is. You know, plenty of teams put in new offensive systems and hit the ground running. I think the offensive line issues trump everything, honestly.
Some teams have had issues and seem to be working a little bit better on that offensive line. But I can't do anything but completely agree with you. You know, when you
look, the Commanders have a new offensive system. Sorry to cut you off. The Saints have a new offensive system.
Right.
Now they've kind of come back down to earth, but their first two games, they scored 91 points.
Right. They were nuts.
Right. Yeah.
I get it. I, I've made the point, 80% of your offensive line was out that last game, you know, after Posick went out. It's just been really, really rough. And I find it hard, Andrew, to judge anything on the offense without being able to say, yeah, but until that offensive line, because I think that's the situation. Until they figure that out and somehow get a little bit of health and a little bit of consistency there, I think it's almost unfair to judge any other aspect of the offense.
I've used this line before, guys, the return to play versus return to performance. Yeah. And something to keep in mind here, Nick Chubb, Nyheim Hines, as we hope to get those guys back. You know, DeJuan Jones comes back, but his knee clearly isn't right. So you're not seeing the all-rookie team level of play and performance that you saw last year. Jed comes back, obviously doesn't make it through the first game. Posick's battling. You know, he got hurt against the Giants. He is fighting it, obviously. Wyatt Teller is out. Nick Harris is back at center. I thought he played reasonably well. I thought he played pretty well, actually. And then there's the miscommunication, obviously, on first down when you get inside the red zone. Deshaun is either trying to move Deontay for him, and clearly he's looking to the right. I don't know what that issue was, but there's a communication issue there, certainly, whether he wasn't lined up right, whether the noise was too much and they couldn't communicate whatever shift Deshaun wanted to make. I got to follow up on that, but then obviously he's looking to the right. The ball gets snapped. So he fell on it. Thankfully, they avoided it there. But there are all those little things adding up. And also, let's give credit to a $100 million player in Christian Wilkins. On the 4th-and-3 to end the game, you have a rookie playing right guard, and the $100 million defensive tackle won off the line. That's what $100 million defensive tackles are supposed to do. He won, and then the play went to, you know, to the left, and Deshaun had to throw across his body and never got the ball off and didn't work.
Good point.
You know, Christian Wilkins made the play. Hats off to him. We spoke so much about Max Crosby. You know, they also got another guy that's pretty good in that line.
Nice. Hey, do you have a college game on Saturday or no?
I do not.
Oh, congratulations. Get a little rest, my man. Get a little rest.
I do not. Yeah, excited. So, actually, this one I'm excited for me as well because, you know, my folks, my family is in Washington, so it'll be good.
All right, outstanding. Mm-hmm. Well, good luck to you this weekend. You know we'll be locked in, and I'll talk to you on the pregame show before the game, too. So, thank you, Andrew. We appreciate you.
You got it, guys.
Thank you, Andrew.
He is Andrew Siciliano, Browns Radio Network, calling all the Browns games this year. And, of course, he was on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. It looks absolutely disgusting. So I was looking at it because we were looking. So,
gosh, anyway. I'm really sorry I've missed this one.
Well, this is what happens when you're not searching.
These are the heartbreaking news stories we're always working on.
Yes. Yeah. Although, actually, you do have a real news story.
I do. All right. So Evan Drellick, who's joined the show before, does a great job covering probably the most boring beat in all of baseball, which is regional sports networks and TV money and money in general. Is what Evan Drellick covers. And he's a great writer on it. He has this up there on the X. Okay. Breaking. Diamond says in court it plans to continue broadcasting one of the remaining teams it has with MLB. Now, for those of you who don't know, Diamond Sports Group is what you know as Bally Sports. They're the ones who have the Guardians and the Cavaliers. Okay.
And Guardians also Sinclair Broadcasting. Like, that's their big parent company. But that, for some reason, no one ever wants to say
and
that.
And poor Bally just bought naming rights and gets stuck with all the bad stuff.
So, like, don't hang the bad news on Bally.
On Bally.
Right? They just paid for the rights to all this misery.
They get paid to have the name on a product that's been rough lately.
Yeah.
Financially.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just so then that way we've got everything, all of our bases covered, and everybody knows exactly what I'm talking about. The other 11 teams with Diamond Sports Group will have to either negotiate a new deal with Diamond or go elsewhere because Diamond has decided that they are holding on to one of their broadcast rights, the Atlanta Braves, and that's it. Drellick goes on to further say MLB's lawyer in court says this is the first that Major League Baseball is hearing of this plan. Jim Bromley, the lawyer for Major League Baseball, says, quote, "We have no information about what is being done. We've had no opportunity to review. And now we're in front of the court and being asked to make our comments." MLB, he goes on to state that Major League Baseball was just sandbagged. Again, that is according to Major League Baseball lawyer Jim Bromley. Just to clean this up a little bit better, Diamond Sports Group, a.k.a. Bally, has carried 12 MLB teams in 2024. Three of those, Cleveland, Texas, and Minnesota, were on one-year deals as of last year. But the other nine teams, Anaheim, Atlanta, Cincinnati, Detroit, Kansas City, Miami, Milwaukee, St. Louis, and Tampa Bay, are all on their own. Diamond only wants the Atlanta Braves. That is just out of court right now.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting to see how this stuff plays out. I mean, you've seen along the way, too. So there's been talk about maybe the Guardians moving to Amazon. Wasn't that one? Some of these teams would move to Amazon.
So that was the thought, is that Amazon was going to step in and buy a chunk of Diamond Sports Group. And so far in bankruptcy court, that has not happened. Now, this is all still in litigation. This is all still being figured out. The Cleveland Cavaliers will be on Diamond / Bally's this year.
Yeah.
Right. So with everybody out there going, oh my gosh, where am I going to watch Cavs games? You're still covered if you have Diamond Sports Group, a.k.a. Bally's.
And you could be covered for the Guardians next year, too. They might renegotiate a deal.
They could. I think it's interesting that you're watching these local networks that are getting into the game. Scripps is in the game now. Gray is in the game. Scripps owns Channel 5. Although, I mean, they had horrible news. They just laid off 200 more people on Scripps News. So I don't know what's going on over there. And then Gray Broadcasting seems to be getting into more local sports too. Gray seems to be a little bit of a stronger candidate, you would think, moving down the road.
Remember when all this started? And you and I sat here and said, you know, you have over-the-air television stations that could really use content.
For sure.
And what's been happening? Over-the-air television stations have been picking up pro sports for content.
Trying to. A couple have. Stay tuned. I think it's just Scripps and Gray. I don't think anybody else is in there.
The Phoenix Suns are over the air, I believe, now.
Which I think is...
The Trailblazers just moved to over-the-air TV.
Yeah. And if it's Scripps and Gray, good for them. And the Rock Entertainment stuff here in town, the Rock Sports Network.
They're up. I mean, that signal's up.
They have all these auxiliary channels that are over the air. Stay tuned. History tends to repeat itself. So we'll see.
Yeah, I just wonder how they'll monetize that. That's the whole thing. I think that's the hard part, is because, you know, you got to sell those commercials throughout the games. Who's going to do it? How are they going to get it? I thought it was interesting when, when STO started, you know, it was like a three-way deal.
Where Guardians went into their own deal.
Right. Time Warner was doing all the sales. Channel 3 was doing, the broadcasting was coming out of Channel 3. It was just like this whole... Mm-hmm. It was a whole weird mix.
And it worked either, and they would have to tell you, either so well or so poorly that it went away. Now, you could say poorly because, oh, wait a minute, we're not making money. Or well because, oh, hey, we just sold it and look what we just did.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, they'd have to tell you what the bottom line was on that when STO went and merged with Fox. So that's, you know, that... Look at it this way. We have a Major League Baseball team in town. You'll be able to watch their games on television someplace next year.
As long as you're in an area where you can get it through stream.
Yeah.
I mean, there are a lot of folks that have been shut out. Television viewership for the Cavs and the Guardians did not help because of what's going on with this. There are a lot of people that haven't been able to watch it. And they've been turned away. But the good news for the Guardians was, you know, attendance at home was great this year. I mean, over 2 million people. Mm-hmm. You know, they put on a great product. Fans wanted to come out, especially during the weekends. I mean, it was great. I think that was one of the best storylines of the year. It might be more than the game itself, is the way the fans embraced the team this year. So anyone that said, oh, they changed the name, I'm not coming back, they seem to have come back.
Well, all right, so I got two options for you.
Okay.
Give me the scale of 1 to 10 of the viability. Okay. I'm not going to have you do percentages or anything like that. Just give me a viability of this. Let's go at step one, which is we'll call this the Baskin and Phelps plan, right?
Okay. Oh, good.
Which Great. Is that a local station that Jeff is talking about, any one of them that is out there that is looking for airtime, because we all know that there are like only a few things in this world that people truly tune in live for.
Rockford Files. Oh, I'm sorry, that's not live.
I was just going to say that's no longer live. But there are things that are appointment television, right? It's basically like the Grammys, the Oscars, the presidential debates, and sports, right? I can't think of anything else. Maybe Dancing with the Stars falls in there,
I'm just going to give you this real quick. What do all those things have in common?
They're live events.
live events that you don't know what the outcome is going to be. And that's what people want to watch live.
Okay. So let's do the, again, scale of 1 to 10 on viability. You've always brought up STO and about how these teams were in the broadcasting business and decided, eh, we're cool. We'll find somebody else to take care of that for us.
Right. Or they made more money for selling it off.
Exactly. I mean, yeah. So let's start with that one. The Baskin Phelps plan, an over-the-air station looking for people to tune in, takes over the Cleveland Guardians. Just 1 to 10, 10 being this is the most likely, 1 being the least likely.
Oh, you're asking if we want it or if it's likely?
Likely.
6.
Yeah, I would probably say it's like a 5 or a 6. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And then it's an option which puts it middle of the pack.
But I do think that they need to, the Cavs and the Guardians need to be on the same page for that because that it works.
The Cavs just started their own network.
I know. That's why. Maybe the Guardians might want to look into that. I mean, it would have been the other way around before when the Guardians had their, or when the Indians had their own network.
And the Cavs actually put some games on Channel 43 last year.
Yeah, so they've already opened the door.
Have things in place to broadcast.
If you ask me, that's a 10 for the fans, man. If the fans can go out and pick up a $5 antenna, stick it on the back of their TV and get all these games for free, that is a win for fans and for the game.
Okay, we all know that part.
Okay.
That without question is the path of least resistance. That we know for sure is the path of least resistance, what we all want to happen, which is that, hey, you just get it off the satellite and life is good.
No, let me give you satellite. No antenna.
That's what I meant. Yeah, meant antenna.
It's okay.
And if you turn it right, you can still get Walter Cronkite. Those signals are bouncing around through the air.
All right.
There are days I just want to punch you.
Here's two.
Most days.
That is. Any day that ends in day.
And give me the viability of two. Again, same scale, 1 to 10. Yeah. Most likely 10, least likely 1. Major League Baseball takes all of the teams that I laid out. And for those of you, once again, who want to know when it comes to those teams, it would be the Guardians, the Rangers, the Minnesota Twins, Anaheim, Atlanta, Cincinnati, Detroit, Kansas City, Miami, Milwaukee, St. Louis, and Tampa Bay. Puts them all together onto the MLB app and sells it to the fans and go, hey, you can watch all of your games this season and we'll call a one-team package. Let's call it $60 because I think the full MLB package you can get for like $110, $120, somewhere in that area.
Can I watch everybody?
You can watch
own team.
You can watch everybody but your own team right now, and I think it's like $100 or something like that. But anyway.
I think you're closer to that. They want to try to stretch every penny they can to get out of it. So I would say the Amazon MLS model.
Well, so that is. So that's the Apple TV model, which is if you have Apple TV Plus, you get the MLS.
Right.
Right. So let's say Major League Baseball got a hold of their own, put it on their own app, and said, all right, we're going to go direct to you. $100, here you go.
Here's why teams don't want it. Teams don't want that because they set their own rate for what's going out. So that's like the YES Network. That's all money that just keeps going in the big circle for the Yankees.
Right.
So, and that's where extra money is able to be available. Like how many times you heard, oh, well, the Guardians sold off STO, so they now have extra money in there that they can get this player or go do that player. I don't know that teams work on a line item budget the way maybe the Guardians might on that because, I mean, we're like, it seems to be like, oh, look at that. They got a new billboard in left field. That means they can afford a new player. Like, I feel like we're the only team that lives and talks that way about a franchise. But the extra money you can make when you're in New York, you're Boston, you're L.A., that's Miami's interesting in that one, in that scenario, too. So because Miami's a gigantic market, but as far as television is concerned, you know, they're not the Dolphins.
Dano.
A little bit of news before we head into break here. Browns have announced the following roster moves. They have signed linebacker Nathaniel Watson to the active roster from the practice squad, and they have designated running back Naheem Himes, guard Michael Dunn, and running back Nick Chubb to return to practice.
Kevin Stefanski's press conference coming up in just a few moments right here, 92.3 America. It's a new release coming out. So Sal, who's always been gracious with his time, will join us here shortly again from ESPN's NFL matchup and longtime beat reporter.
That's a big concept there.
Which one?
How football explains America.
You need to read the book.
Exactly. I mean, that's big. Is it not?
I think so. It's big. I love when Sal has just such a good perspective on the NFL.
He sure does.
Man, he covers the league like nobody else. So we'll have him coming up here in just a few moments. Can we go back to the Kevin Stefanski press conference again? Nick Chubb, just like the new footballs they got in Berea, is excited to have both those back.
Be nice.
I agree when I heard him say
downplay Nick's return and maybe the emotional lift that he could give everybody, I thought the same thing. However, he's, I think, also trying to not put a whole lot on Nick, expectation-wise.
I understand.
You know what
that.
I mean?
No, I totally get that. But I think you can recognize the hard work he had to put in to get back to the spot where he was. And let's face it, the Browns could have cut bait with him. They could have said, you know what, Nick, thanks. It's been great. And this injury is really, really going to be tough to come back. And
no, and they paid him.
And they did. Mm-hmm. So let's embrace that.
But Andy,
there hasn't been a lot of good news around this team lately.
But don't you think, and let me, I think I know you well enough.
Right.
Don't you think most NFL coaches, MLB managers, mm-hmm. NBA head coaches, NHL guys, couldn't they all be a little more honest and frank without giving away trade secrets?
Yeah, that's not
a little more cordial.
It's not a trade secret. It's just silly. Let's embrace it. That's what I think. All right, let's go to the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. We bring in a guy who is always gracious with his time, outstanding, if not the best reporter, I think, in the NFL. Love watching him. Love watching NFL matchup. He is Sal Palantonio. Hi, Sal. How are you?
Hello, Sal.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on today. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you know we love having you on. So I'm going to ask you a really silly question, then we're going to get into the football. Because we were just wondering, you live in Philly full-time, right? That's your home, right?
Yeah, I live outside of Philly, yep.
So, and then you've got the Browns and Commanders this week, right?
Yes.
Will you drive or will you take the train? I know this is, I'm the only person that cares.
I haven't decided yet. It depends on, you know, a lot of different factors. Like if you leave on like a Saturday afternoon late, you get caught in I-95 traffic and you're just screwed. So then I'll take the train. But if I'm driving really early on Saturday morning, I will drive early and there won't be any traffic. So it depends on when I leave. The problem is getting out there on Sunday if you don't have a car. If you're taking the train getting out, you have to leave Landover, Maryland at a certain time in order to take the train from Maryland back to Philly, and then it's really tricky. So in most cases, I do drive.
Yeah, I don't know why. I'm fascinated because we're just not a train city here in Cleveland. So when people take the trains to get, you know, those East Coast cities. So I'm concerned about how you're getting there, but I'm sure you'll make it
well,
somehow.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. After 30 years, I do appreciate the concern.
So, Sal, in other words, no one here in Cleveland.
Late, but, you know, better late than never. I really appreciate it. Yeah, it warms my heart. It really does.
People care, Sal.
Yeah,
we care.
So nobody here in Cleveland should complain about driving.
That would be a great bumper sticker, Cleveland Cares. That's a good one. I like that.
There's Andy's new business, Sal. Thank you.
All right, I got to go print up some T-shirts. I'll be back.
I like that a lot.
Cleveland Cares.
1-3 Cleveland Browns after losing to the Giants and the Raiders. Should we be panicking? More importantly, Sal, should they be panicking?
Yeah, I think they should definitely be concerned. There's no question. There's no rhythm on offense whatsoever. You know, the protection is off. There's just nothing going on offensively. And, you know, I was just shocked that they lost to the Giants. The Giants are one of the worst teams in the NFL. They allowed them to execute on offense in certain parts of the game. I was just very surprised. Tell me, what is going on with Jim Schwartz and the defense? Because I can't figure it out. I think this will be a big test for both these teams this weekend. No question about it. You know, the Browns and Schwartz, I've always liked him, you know, over the years when he was here in Philadelphia. He's got his record against rookie quarterbacks is pretty good. And this will be a test for Jaden Daniels without question. But I just don't see any kind of rhythm on offense at all.
We're wondering about all of that, Sal. And on offense, we keep going back to this. Okay, the offensive line is just really, really, really beat up right now. But is that something we should keep going back to, or is that something that they should just figure out how to make that offense work despite all the injuries on the offensive line?
It's hard to play football when you have injuries on your offensive line. Just ask Aaron Rodgers. He had a hard time playing football against the Broncos. He's got an old, injured offensive line, and he can't move. It's really difficult. Now, you know, I've seen Kevin Stefanski engineer certain offense,
where his offensive line is challenged, and I've seen him lay out the quarterback in certain cases. And now that things are exposed, you know, it's going to be very difficult for them, I think, to fix it unless and until they get the quarterback to put his foot in the ground, put that right foot in the ground, and, you know, get the ball out of his hands a lot more quickly than he's getting out of his hands right now.
Mm. Sal, I know that, like, a lot of people say when the Browns are relevant, it's good for the league. When Washington's relevant, it's good for the league as well. And Jaden Daniels has been fun to watch. Just your thoughts on him.
Well, we did a draft show for the NFL matchup show back in March. And in the film study that we did on Jaden Daniels, we were not surprised by his movement. We were shocked by how accurate his arm was on the deep ball. And we talked about that on our show. And when I saw that they were going to match Cliff Kingsbury's offense with Jaden Daniels, you know, I said right away, this has the chance to be very good. They drafted the young McCaffrey, and I think he's working out as a great slot receiver. Scary Terry McLaurin, that's what we call him here in Philadelphia, because every time he comes to Philly, he just terrorizes Lincoln Financial Field, so we call him Scary Terry. he's made an instant connection with Jaden Daniels, and the league is all about dual threat quarterbacks who can throw accurately on the run, or can throw accurately on second reaction throws, or accurately off script. And so far, Daniels has shown that. Now, this will be a different challenge for him. Like I said, Schwartz is pretty good at figuring out what young quarterbacks can do and cannot do. And the Browns do have a pass rush, and they'll make it much more difficult on him. I think this will be a very important test for Jaden Daniels. It is only four games. I don't like to go crazy after four games. We saw it with Robert Griffin III. I would say this is the number one thing right now in the National Football League. Sacks are at a five-year high. Blitzing is at a six-year high. Teams are just coming after the quarterback, and teams are sacking the quarterback and hitting the quarterback. Hits on the quarterback are at a three-year high. So it's incumbent upon these offensive coordinators to do a better job, in my view, of protecting quarterbacks. Last week was a very good example of that in Philly. Here was Todd Bowles, who blitzes quarterbacks when he wakes up and has coffee in the morning, and then may stop for a little bit of lunch and a nap, but then he will resume when the game starts. And he just has blitzed Jalen Hurts constantly in the last three matchups, sacked him six times, and the Eagles did really a poor job of protecting Jalen Hurts without Lane Johnson in the football game. And Hurts did a bad job of protecting himself. So to me, this is the number one trend in the NFL right now. Remember, and I think I might have mentioned this on your show last year, NFL quarterbacks, there were 72 different quarterbacks that started last year, 68 the year before, all-time high. And this is a problem in the league. These offensive coordinators are really good at scheming up passing concepts and passing trees and all this other stuff, but they better start protecting their quarterbacks, because that's the way you win football games now in the NFL over a 17-game season.
Sal, that screams running game to me. Yes, no?
And rushing it is the highest per game, per team, since 1983. Running the football is the highest per game per team since 1983. I mean, we're playing 70s football right now because teams are coming after the quarterback.
Maybe that hopefully Nick Chubb can do something for the Browns as he comes back today. I don't know what the feeling is on how quick he's going to be able to come back, but he's been back. He's allowed to practice now. He's got this 21-day practice window there. Just your thoughts on what he might be able to add, and realistically, maybe what Browns fans should expect when you've got one of the best running backs back, but we're just not sure how healthy he is.
Yeah, you know, it's not a question of just loading up on Chubb. Just load up on rushing attempts. Yeah. You look at it. Throughout the NFL, over the last couple of years, if you add rushing attempts plus completions, rushing attempts plus completions, if it's over 50, you win the game 9 times out of 10. Go back to the box scores last week, rushing attempts plus completions, and you win the football game. So that's what they have to do in this game, particularly because you want to keep the hottest quarterback in the NFL off the football field.
Sal, with that in mind, I've been perplexed here. The Browns in the last two games have given carries to their running backs 14 times and 12 times. While Deshaun Watson has been dodging, you know, defenders trying to sack him, it was 8 sacks 2 games ago. This is a team that has always run the ball well. Why are they not running the football when Deshaun's certainly having to deal with a pass rush like crazy, and you have a new offense that might be trying to establish itself? I've not quite understood what they're trying to do.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that particular question, but in general, there's volume and there's production. So what you see is a coordinator / head coach like Stefanski, if he doesn't get the production, he turns down the volume automatically. Or if the quarterback goes to the line of scrimmage with a run play and he sees the safety's nosing down or doesn't like how heavy the box is, he'll dump out of it. And we just don't know how much of that is taking place.
It's a great point.
Even sometimes when you ask quarterbacks and offensive coordinators and head coaches that direct question, they won't tell you the truth. I was listening to your commentary before I came on the air. Nobody tells you the truth anymore. It's very difficult to decipher, okay, did Deshaun Watson go to the line of scrimmage with a design run play that was given to him by Stefanski and then dump out of it? Or was that a design pass play? Sometimes you just don't know. So it has to be a willingness on both the play caller and the quarterback to stick to the run, even if you're not getting the production, because sometimes the volume is just as important to play complementary football. You're keeping your defense on the bench. They're getting a breather that allows them to do their job much, much better. I don't understand it. Right now, in vogue, in the league, I can tell you, the teams that are running the ball successfully are having much more success. Which is kind of odd, too, because wasn't it like two summers ago I was on your show and we were talking about how general managers don't want to pay running backs and they don't value them very much?
Yeah.
And here you have, I mean, where would the Falcons be without Bijan Robinson, who is, I believe, a top five pick or at least a top 10 pick?
And surprised a lot of folks when they took a running back that high.
Pay those men. Yeah. That's what I say. Yeah. Pay those men. Sal, tell me before we let you go, because I want to talk about your book. It's got a re-release now. How Football Explains America, especially with the holidays coming up, could be a good gift. What's the new release? What does this mean?
Yeah, it's a re-release. We've updated certain chapters of it and released it. The book did really, really well over a period of time, and the publisher was looking for titles to re-release, and I raised my hand, and I said, yeah, I'll work on this. This sounds good. In a lot of schools have used it. A lot of coaches have given it to their players. And so it's How Football Explains America. It's the how and why the game was created in the late 1800s and all the cultural influences on tackle football in America and how it became our national obsession. And I appreciate you mentioning it. It's on Amazon.com. It's being re-released in an updated paperback edition. And, Christmas is coming up.
See, before you know it, I just want. Are you concerned then about the future of the game, especially here in the States, where sometimes it's tough? Here in Ohio, it's tough to field. You know, it used to be it was a varsity at the high school level; it'd be a JV and a freshman team. Now it's getting tough to even field JV teams around here.
It's like that everywhere. Yeah. I live in Southern New Jersey. It's a big deal, you know. But in the South, it's booming. So it's in certain areas of the country. Flag football, I think, is a good thing. I really do. I think flag football is great for the game. And you see all these 7-on-7 tournaments. leagues around all over the place. I think that's good. It's good for skill position players. Football is good. It's the ultimate team game. And, you know, you really find out. It doesn't build character. It reveals character in many ways.
It's a great point, Sal. Sal, thank you so much. You know we love talking to you, and we look forward to, you know, seeing your stuff over the weekend. And, of course, we're watching an NFL matchup on ESPN. Thank you, Sal.
Thank you, Sal.
Thank you, gentlemen.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. Sal Palantonio from ESPN, the Sal Pal on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Again, a reminder, his book, How Football Explains America, new release, and maybe a great gift for the holidays coming on up.
An Election Day gift.
What's better, bring over a turkey and for Thanksgiving? Yes.
An Election Day?
How you can define America.
How it explains America, yeah. I mean, come on.
It'd be great. I think you should let all the candidates line up and tackle each other. It'd be great.
That's fabulous.
It's American politics at its best. All right, let's talk a little bit more about what Sal had to say.
That running game stuff was interesting.
I thought it was, too. Deshaun Watson also coming up at 1 o'clock. Baskin and Phelps, 92.3 The Fan. I love that stuff. Sal Palantonio, again, he's got a new book out, How Football Explains America. Check it out. It's a new release. And, man, I thought he was good. Deshaun Watson's press conference coming up maybe in about 15 minutes, so we'll hang tight as we get ready for what he has to say going into this week's game against Washington. He's Jeff Phelps. I'm Andy Baskin. You are at 216-474-0092. Jeff, thoughts on our conversation with Sal?
It baffles me. Not what Sal said. It just, and I asked him about the Browns and not running the ball, and he didn't have the specifics on it, which, of course, neither do we. And, you know, he said, I can't explain why they're not doing that. As Sal said, they're running the football more than the league has run the football since 1983 at this point. I thought that was a fascinating number for him to share with us. And it makes me wonder why the Browns, I mean, we're talking about an offensive line. I know an offensive line is beat up, so you can't run the ball. Okay, then you can't pass protect, then you can't do anything. Yeah, you can do something. Offensive linemen love to block in the running game. Run the ball and help set up everything else. And yet the Browns are among the league low in running attempts this year. I do not get it.
Last week, they threw the ball 32 times. They ran the ball 22. And 8 of those carries were Deshaun Watson. So your running backs only ran the ball 14 times last week. And normally I would say, okay, maybe your passing numbers are a little bit higher because you need to score more than a touchdown. You need more than 10 points. The Browns were within the 10-point range the entire game. So don't tell me that they were chasing it down and they threw the ball more at the end of the game
because
question, they were behind.
You're absolutely right, Andy.
So there's no excuse on that. I just...
And the weird thing is we know Kevin Stefanski likes to run the football. Now, do you think you can't run it with this line? I'd argue that because if you can't run it, then you can't pass it. So why are you passing so much? You know what I mean? Maybe if you balance it, it'll help things out a little bit. And I also, you don't have Nick Chubb. Sorry, Deontay Foreman, when he took over in Carolina after McCaffrey got traded, rushed for over 900 yards. Jerome Ford had a real solid season last year. You can run the ball. You can do that. You have Royce Freeman on the practice squad. Is Royce going to the Hall of Fame? No. Can he run the ball? Yes. And we see week after week after week, Andy, guys who get carries get yards. That's the way the NFL works. And I would really hope the Browns come out and run the football against the Commanders on Sunday.
We've got those stats that Sal just gave us. I want to go through those again because they were fascinating. I want to take up a phone call so first. Miranda is in Westlake. Hi, Miranda.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you doing?
Hi.
I'm okay. Like, I've, like, literally sat on my shoulders of my grandpa during the drive. I've been a football fan my whole entire life, and I was a sports player my whole entire life. I coached our junior national teams for soccer. I was a team player and a leader.
And Miranda, first of all, congratulations. That is an amazing resume. Amazing.
No, that's not what I'm talking about, though.
Oh.
I know leaders. Okay.
Okay.
So, like, for 3 years, these men have been giving everything to this quarterback that's been paid millions of dollars more than him that's been playing on the bench, and And our receivers, like, you can't blame our freaking receivers for, like, getting a perfect throw once in a while because, like, they're usually jumping, like, high in the air 7 feet to get their fingertips on the freaking ball and getting crushed. And our offensive line and our defense, how many times are we going to get on the field with our defense? Like, we cannot blame our defense, and our offensive line is hurt because, you know what? It's really hard to be an offensive lineman when there is no communication and he sits alone on the bench. Like,
Miranda, I have to ask you. I'll ask you.
Not a leader.
All right, I'm going to ask you the magic question. Do you feel better after getting that off your chest? Do you feel better?
I do. I'm sorry.
No,
I, like,
you're allowed
really
to. That's all right.
You
got the expanded version of a Browns Therapy Monday. That's all. Miranda, call again. We appreciate it. Thank you. That was a Browns Therapy Monday call.
It was
right
certainly
there.
A Browns Therapy Monday call. There was, on a Wednesday.
Yeah. So, look, who was it that said we don't let people talk? Who was it?
Somebody who got under your skin.
Way under my skin. Keith's in Willoughby. Hi, Keith.
Yeah, how you doing, guys?
Good, good.
Hi, Keith.
Hey, man. Listen, I've been watching football for 60 years.
Another good resume.
Yep.
That doesn't make me an expert, but I'm just saying that. I've observed that I don't think it's not a running game anymore, and I think we've seen that over the last years that it's become more of a passing game. And if you look at, like, especially look at, we used to have great running backs, right? Brown, Greg Pruitt, Leroy Kelly.
We've always seemed to have good running backs. Yep.
Well, yeah, we always had them, and that was the way it was back in the day. But now we are passing more. And so my perspective on the offensive defensive lines, the offensive lines, if you look at just the typical athlete on the offensive line versus defensive line, the offensive lines guys are not as athletic. They tend to be bigger. That's okay for pass blocking. But I submit to you guys that if we turn things around and the guys on the offensive line were as athletic and as fast as the guys on the defensive line, we'd have a different situation here. We wouldn't have an offensive line problem anymore.
Well, our offensive line problem, though, is not – it's not – it's injuries. I mean, like, how do you – there's no answer for
that. Well, we think it's injuries. I think it's injuries, but other teams have injuries, and they're getting it done offensively.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Keith and Willoughby, thank you. Appreciate it. Let me give you some of those numbers because I thought they were super interesting. I'll just dive into just one or two. Again, Deshaun Watson, his press conference coming up about 1 o'clock. 1 month into the 2024 season, the competition has never been tighter as more games have been decided by 8 points, 39 of them, 7 points, 38 of them, and 6 points, 32 at this point than any other season. What's that say about the parity? These are all Sal Pal numbers that he gave us during the interview. That's amazing. They've been tied. I mean, look, the Browns games have all been within a touchdown except for Dallas.
And Sal was stunned they lost to the Giants.
Blown away.
So were we.
Yeah, I think we all were.
Mm-hmm.
We're still trying to figure it out. I'm going to go through some more of these numbers. We're also going to have Deshaun Watson coming up from Berea, so we'll get into that. In just a few moments. Actually, let's do that. Let's do it right now. Let's keep going because I like these numbers. League-wide teams are averaging 21.6 points per game, the fewest through 4 weeks since 2010. Are defenses better?
No. No.
Are offenses worse?
I think teams are trying to figure some things out, Andy. It goes back, I think, to what Sal said. You know, the league is designed to favor the passing game. Defensive coordinators have figured out, okay, how can we do that? Well, we can blitz like crazy. We can send everybody after the quarterback. And now offenses have to adjust. And how do they adjust? You adjust by running the football. I mean, that what keeps a – if a guy's blitzing and you run past him, oh, that didn't work, did it? And I think that's something that you're going to see is going to be a problem, Andy. I do. Hmm. I think it's a problem.
Well, so throughout the history of football, it's always been the balance, right? I think you brought up the scales before. Right. That's how you see it, and it's the right way to do it.
Right.
For the last, probably until about 2 years ago, the scales were so heavily tipped on the offensive side that it was ridiculous.
Sure.
Then all of a sudden, defenses had figured out those Shanahan, Kubiak systems that we saw spreading all over the place that got the defense moving one direction, the quarterbacks moving the other direction, all of the cutbacks, all of that different stuff that was working so well. The defense had figured that out. They started playing these cover two, put the dome on top, and now the defense has swung to where it is so far ahead of what offenses are doing, and we are waiting for offenses to compensate. Now, some of that has to come down to what you said, Jeff, offensive line play. Like, offensive line play, we've had Mike Martz on the show going, we've seen lately the worst offensive line play we've ever seen. That this is the worst that it's been. That has become an epidemic. Now they're doing stuff on the front. Robert Mays did a great job breaking all this stuff down of what they're doing in fronts now to confuse the hell out of offensive lines with twists and stunts and all sorts of stuff going on, that now you're not only putting a dome on top to keep big plays from happening, but now you're confusing the guys up front. It just seems like defenses right now are really high on the scale, and offenses are trying to figure out how to rebalance the scale.
Well, let me give you some teams, okay?
This is
NFL rushing stats through four games. And Sal said the teams that are running the ball are winning and doing pretty well.
Yeah, the stat that he gave us was amazing.
Baltimore is leading the league in rushing at 220 yards per game. Derrick Henry's been great. And though Baltimore's record isn't magnificent right now, I think they look good. They're the number one rushing team in the NFL. Green Bay won with Malik Willis at quarterback while Jordan Love was out. He had a lot to do with the rushing, but they ran the ball well. The Commanders are running the ball with Jaden Daniels, but also with their running backs. The Eagles have had some issues, but they have Saquon Barkley. And you see the teams that are running the ball are doing pretty well offensively and in wins and losses.
All right. We'll dive into all this stuff. Also, Deshaun Watson coming up here next. Baskin Phelps 92. Andrew Siciliano joined us at 11:20. All of these interviews are available on the Baskin and Phelps podcast on the Odyssey app. Jeff?
Andy?
Yeah, I'm just trying to go back and think about what Deshaun said, and I was looking through my notes, and I'm just like, you picked up something that I did too. I didn't. I would have liked more information on it. You're right.
I don't want to interpret something, but there was one thing he said that made me think, interesting choice of words.
And those were?
He was asked about Jaden Daniels, who's been terrific for the Commanders.
Fun.
And he said that he's had, you know, a history with them, and they worked out together in Arizona State and blah, blah, blah. And then he said he looks like he's real comfortable with what they're running offensively. And I thought, please, somebody follow up with, Deshaun, are you comfortable with what the Browns are running? And nobody did, and that's okay. But his choice of words there, I thought, were interesting. And I wonder if he's comfortable with what the Browns are running.
What do you think? Running is a key word because he's running for his life.
I would hope he's not, if you want to know the truth, because it looks like garbage.
After the first drive. The first drives haven't looked like garbage.
Okay, but I'm not looking at one possession. I'm looking at overall.
Okay.
Overall, the offense looks terrible. And if he's comfortable with what they're running, well, I don't know how he could be. Or anybody else on offense. I mean, it's not being very effective. So I would think nobody's comfortable. But I did think it was a really interesting choice of words when he said he looks comfortable with what they're running.
I don't know. It doesn't feel right. There's a lot of things that don't feel right. And I don't know if you...
And Andy, though we've harped on the offensive line for good and obvious reasons, there's a lot more to it than that. There's got to be. There's got to be.
Well, let me ask Frank in Grafton that. Hi, Frank.
Frank?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Listen, I think we all know the offensive line's a problem. It would be good if Deshaun got rid of the ball sooner. Did they ever look at tapes and go back at how Brian Sipe ran things? Did they ever look in the past and see how things worked? I would think this would be addressed to Andrew Berry. Start drafting offensive linemen. Forget wide receivers, quarterbacks, defensive backs. You need more offensive linemen. And I'd like to have a coach that when preseason starts, he tells the regulars, you're going to play. You get hurt, you get hurt. It's next man up. They're getting paid big money to play, start playing these guys. If they're going to get hurt in preseason, they're probably going to get hurt in the regular season. Start treating these guys like the money they get and make them play. And then we'd have some, maybe some continuity when the season starts. What do you think?
All right, Frank, thank you. I don't know. They've gone to three games. It's not four games like it used to be in the preseason. I really would be super upset if we lost a player for the season during preseason, but I do think you're right. They don't seem ready or prepared. I don't like having these conversations saying, well, the first three games of the season are preseason. No, they're not. They're games that count. You want to go back, though, you want to talk about the offensive line and building that offensive line through the draft. Jed Wills was the first-round pick in 20.
Jones. He's drafted seven offensive linemen since he's been here, at least one in every draft. So that's not the issue. They have drafted offensive linemen.
Zach Zinter, Dwan Jones,
but
James Hudson.
You've used nothing higher than a third on an offensive lineman, except once.
Although you didn't have
except
a first.
Except once. It was Jed Wills.
Yeah, and you didn't have a first.
But you have had seconds. You used a first-rounder on Jed Wills. And other than that, your highest draft choice is a third-rounder to Zach Zinter. But, Andy, that's okay.
I'm looking at our seconds.
You get good offensive linemen and you develop guys. That's what that position is about, more than maybe any on the football field.
We only have 2 seconds, right? Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah and Grant Delpit. Michael Hall, yeah. Sorry, he just hasn't been. Hopefully we'll get to see him in Philadelphia, as that story kind of broke yesterday. Yeah, I forgot about Hall there for a second. Mm-hmm. I don't know. This team just absolutely befuddles me. I sit and watch them play, and I just – every week you think, well, should they be 3-1? Yeah, that's what I'm thinking right now. They should be 3-1. Mm-hmm. Other things, he did talk a little bit about Nick Chubb coming back, and he seemed more energetic about it than the head coach did. The first down difficulties and being behind the line of scrimmage when you go to second or being, beyond 10 yards, that's been an issue. But you're right, Jeff, that the Jaden Daniels line about being able to play free.
He seems comfortable really with what they're running. That was the choice of words. And I don't want to overanalyze it, but I thought that was just an interesting choice of words. And boy, I wish somebody would have followed it up with, are you comfortable with what the Browns are running?
David Njoku was another topic today between both Deshaun Watson and Kevin Stefanski. I do think he makes a difference. You know, when you're sitting here and you're trying to piece together an offensive line and you've got the opportunity to hold your tight end closer to the line than spreading them out, you've got the opportunity to have that, that sixth offensive lineman. And I think it's important. I think it's important for Deshaun. Did you think, because this came up too, did you think Deshaun got rid of the ball a little quicker this week?
Yeah.
I did
too. It looked that way.
It looked like they had worked on that and that became a point of emphasis from the quarterback spot. Maybe that might be the reason he upgraded to, okay, I'm not blaming Deshaun Watson for this loss.
He played well enough to win a game.
I don't know, Jeff. He wasn't on one drive in the beginning of the game?
I thought he played well enough to win a game.
I did too. But
I didn't think he was, he wasn't great. And
he was meh.
Well, here's, you go get a quarterback to win games for you when you have a chance to win a game. And in the fourth quarter, they had three opportunities. One was fumbled away by Jerome Ford. Mm-hmm. But the other two, it was a 3-and-out. And then you didn't get it done at the end. And, you gave the ball back to the offense. Once with 6:40 left and the other was like with, what, 3? And you had a 3-and-out and then you had the fourth down that didn't work. And, sorry, that's what you're paying the guy for. Let's be honest.
It's weird.
You're not talking about your guard in that situation. You're talking about your quarterback.
If he was a rookie quarterback and I said to you over the last 2 weeks, they've had the opportunity, and they've just fallen short by not scoring in the fourth quarter, but yet they drove down the field. They just came up empty. So you would think eventually with a rookie quarterback, you wouldn't come up empty anymore. I you know, the missed extra point was something we haven't talked about for 2 days now. And that missed extra point changed the whole game.
Oh, maybe.
I mean, you could
maybe.
Get, maybe, you know, unless they lose in overtime.
Maybe, but again, I'm a big believer in this. Just let's just say Dustin Hopkins had made that extra point. Does everything else go the same way the rest of the game? No, things. You know, the game is
no, because you would have kicked the field goal.
Well, the game is well, but you might not have had a chance for a field goal because from that point on, everything changes. You know, maybe the Browns.
I don't think you go for it on fourth down there.
Well, but they might have run. They might not have been there. That's my point on fourth down. You know, you hope that it goes the same way and you have a chance for the for a field goal, but you don't know that.
But you also
because
knew,
everything changes if, after anything yeah, that happens in a game.
But you also know that once they miss the extra point, they're chasing it.
Yeah.
You're chasing that
yeah,
point the
which,
whole time.
Which did change their philosophy, but maybe, you know, maybe they had called different plays on that last drive and wouldn't have gotten down into field goal range. Maybe something wouldn't have worked.
Hmm. John and Wadsworth. Hi, John.
John.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. One of the things I just think that isn't getting mentioned about Deshaun's play on Sunday is that, you know, if you take away that BS holding call, and if Amari catches a ball that he had no reason to drop that ball, you give those two passes to him, you're looking at a stat line of over 280 yards passing with two touchdowns and no picks, and you know you've got the lead. So I really can't blame anything in this game on Deshaun Watson. I just think the stats are a little skewed by what he didn't get from his teammates and from the refs.
I don't disagree with that. I mean, you're talking about a 93-yard penalty on that callback. I and you were sitting here, we're talking about a 260-some-yard game for him, and I think that we look at it a little bit different, right?
Yeah, completely. And,
yeah.
You know, like you guys made a good point. He is getting the ball out quicker. And I think just we talk about the eye test so much. I think the last few weeks you're seeing him kind of improving and getting to look like a quarterback that we would be happy with. You know, at the very least, like, we could tolerate what he's doing. He's just, for some reason, as he starts coming on, the rest of the team is falling off. It's
there was a John, there was a notion that I got from a couple people after the game that is it perhaps, especially when you go back and think about the interception to Amari, is he throwing the ball? I can't believe I'm saying this because this is driving me nuts.
Don't say it.
Do you know where I'm going?
I have an idea.
Is he throwing the ball too hard?
That's what I was wondering. You're going to say.
Is he missing touch on the ball? I don't know what if that's a better.
Seemed to work for Brett Favre.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and I mean, John Elway made the Hall of Fame like throwing it through a wall. I mean, these guys get paid to catch the ball, and if you've ever worn receiver gloves, those things are like wearing Velcro. So gotcha. Hard or not, I mean, they've got to catch the ball.
Gotcha. Thank you, John.
A little bit of news coming down. Tanner Bibee will start game one of the ALDS for the Guardians. Tanner Bibee, your game one starter for the ALDS when the Guards take the field on Saturday.
Not a shocker.
No surprise.
No, not a surprise at all.
Glad to have it announced, though.
And again, the game time, so what did I say, 107 start on Saturday? Is that right?
108.
Oh,
eight,
man.
Andy.
So what if I'm a minute early? You know what? Forget all you people. Better to be a minute early than a minute late. That's what I say. Mean.
It's the way Andy's gone through life.
That is true. I've always been a minute early. I feel good about that. 216-474-0092. That is the number to call in. Baskin and Phelps, 92.3 The Fan.